Okay.
Très.
Okay, so I have the pleasure today of speaking with Eric Fresley. Amazing. I never in a million years thought that you and I would be doing this when we were hanging out at the park, 50 years ago.
Yeah.
So welcome, Eric.
Yeah. It's been how, I mean, Mickey, how long has it been, right?
Crazy.
1975,
That's right.
right?
That's
14,
right.
40 years since I've spoken to you.
Unbelievable.
Something like that. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Which is wild, but like your recordings are going, I think it doesn't take long to kind of get into the mode with those from Queens Village, right? It's kind of like you left them
Yeah.
off.
So I have this question for you to start. Can you just you've moved. You're one of the few people that escaped. Can you talk about your family and what you did for a living and where you ended up?
Sure. So, so I moved away from Queens Village, Belrose in 1975, after graduating from Lourdes. Right now I live in Colorado. I live in Highlands Ranch or Douglas County. I've got two beautiful daughters, one ironically that lives in Manhattan. And she's out in Denver now for Bitcoin conference. That's kind of the industry that she's in. And then
Well,
my other daughter, my other daughter moved back from Atlanta back to Colorado. She's in the works for Invesco, so she's kind of a wholesaler. And she moved back, which I'm really grateful for because she's just down the road now. And so, yeah, I've been married since 1986 to my lovely wife Nancy. I married the farmer's daughter, totally opposite of anything. New York, she's from Minnesota. Farmer, her parents were farmers. Pretty interesting background, but she's a graduate from the University of Minnesota. So my life's been pretty interesting. It's definitely, I definitely love the West and Colorado. But I always appreciate the upbringing that I had. It's kind of been very much what grounded me. And then industry-wise, I've worked 25 years in telecommunications. I was basically I would say like I was kind of a kind of a little bit of a jack of all trades. I did project management. I managed a couple of platforms for our, basically I got a degree in finance. I was a late bloomer, went back to school. Had kind of a computer background, some vocational classes that I took in high school. And then I, ended up working for one of the Mountain Bell companies. It was actually Mountain Bell, US West, CenturyLink, then Level 3, and now it's called Lumen Technologies. And so anyway, so I did that for the last 25 years, but I've worked in other industries. Mickey, to be honest, I've been working since high school, to be honest.
Yeah, I
You
think we
know,
all have.
right? And kind of the, I don't know, just that work ethic, probably a Queens Village thing. I don't know.
So I have a an Eric Fresley story that sort of frames you for me back in 1975. So if anybody ever mentioned your name, this is the story that pops to mind, and maybe you'll remember it. So we were in eighth you we were in eighth grade, and I had Mrs. Garbus, and you had Mr. Riley. Am I right? Yeah. So
Correct.
Mrs. one day Mrs. Garbus sends me across the hallway to give Mr. Riley a note. Now, for those who don't know Mr. Riley, he was a little guy who saw himself as very tough. And he had this game that he would play when he got angry, that he would take his ring off
Oh
and
yeah.
put it on the desk, that implied that he was going to strike you, right? That was the implication. And he often would take his jacket off also to show we're going to do battle, as if he, you know, had fist fights with us in the hallway. It was weird. Anyway, right. He was always this tough guy in a little man's body. So I come across the hallway. I knock on the door. I come in. He's very PO'd at me for interrupting his classroom. And he says something like, you know, what do you want? You're interrupting my class. And I said, Mrs. Garbus asked me to bring this note to you. So you were sitting in the last row, last seat. I remember this like it was yesterday. And I remember looking around the classroom while Riley is reading the note. And all of a sudden, he stops reading and he looks up and he looks in your direction. And he says, Mr. Fresley, you have something you want to talk to all of us about, right? And he right. does his thing. He takes his ring off and he puts it on the desk and he takes his jacket off. And then he starts to make this motion like, Eric, you and I are going out in the hallway. And you stand up and you begin to roll up your shirt sleeves as if to also say, I'm ready for you. You know, let's go, right? And then right. he says, you sit right back down. And I thought I was just going to start to cry from laughing there, that you had totally intimidated him and he just called the whole thing off. How accurate is your memory of that?
You know, what's funny, I don't remember that particular event, but it sounds like me. It's funny. I was going to ask you if you had a memory to put some context around your yes. memory of me since it's been 40 years. And I do remember the whole ring thing. You know, he was always fidgeting with the ring. And
yes, yes.
It's kind of like the ring would come off if you're going to get cracked on the side of the head or something. Right,
right, right.
And so I remember that. He had a little bit, and I think you've referenced this in like one of your previous calls or whatever. He had a little bit of a maybe small syndrome or something, like, you know, it was like, I don't know. He needed to intimidate at times, you know, but, you know, honestly, I probably deserved, you know, some of that myself, just bringing it on. But, that sounds like me back then doing.
Yes,
that.
You, but in fairness, you were. A tough guy growing up.
Yeah, I wasn't, I don't consider myself that tough. I think I was bigger for my age. And
yes, yes.
Part of that, you know, goes to the Lady of Lourdes story. Like in second grade, I mean, I was born in December, right? So I would have been properly like in your class had I been born in 61, I think.
Right.
And so a lot of my friends and stuff were the previous class. And I remember second grade, one of my early memories of Lourdes was, I got the report card and stuff like that. And I was a little bit of a wild man, I would say.
Yep.
You know, focusing on school wasn't my thing in second grade. And my mom went to Lourdes and, you know, the nuns are like, and the teachers are like, you know, I'm not sure, Eric, you know, he's not really focusing, you know, should we leave him back a year? And, you know, so I got left back a year. It was a choice, you know, between my mom and the nuns and whatever. Yeah. And so I had stayed back a year. So I was a little bit bigger, you know.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. And then I had, you know, so, which it kind of makes my story a little bit unique in that I had, you know, I had you guys as friends, but I had the class before me, Joanne Fleming and Jeannie Kircher Terry Calder and, you know, Pat Kelly and, McPartland and Tommy Sleezer and those guys. So there was a lot of people. So anyway, I had it kind of the best of both worlds because I had, you know, all you chuckleheads that I grew up with, right, in my normal classes when we went to school, and then, you know, the previous class, which I did a lot of my sports with, right, growing
right.
up. You know, so, you know, which is, again, a, you know, I consider it more of a blessing. And it was probably the right move, at that time. I think, my mom had 8 kids. So, you know, school wasn't the priority. I think it was.
Right. No, but you were also.
Having as much fun as I could.
Go ahead. You were also a great athlete.
It's funny. I gravitated towards sports. A lot of it was the whole Braddock Park. I mean, yeah. Lourdes had such a good sports program, right?
Yeah.
We had, there was basketball and baseball. We had everything that was going on between the park and the school. And, you know, that's where that's where my energies were. And I enjoyed it. I love playing sports. It was more of, that's always been kind of, my go-to over, like, I think, academics was not really my focus, especially at Lourdes. It was just, it was about having fun, cracking people up and doing sports.
You also had the Fresley dynasty, whatever you want to call it. The cachet that came with being a Fresley, right? There was something to that, your brother Marty set a particular tone. He was a big guy. He was an athlete. He was, and I think your whole family kind of carried this quality forward. And obviously you being one of the boys, you inherited that, and I think that was part of your story also.
Definitely. My brother, it's a memory. My brother Richard, put up a basketball court in our house on 241st Street, right? And that stood up for a long time, even after we moved to Colorado. But I mean, there were a lot of basketball games. I could remember Marty and stuff playing in the backyard. Yeah. Philip Allen. I mean, we played a lot of hoops. Yeah. Of course, Marty was, Marty got college scholarship. Marty was, the legacy. You'll need, the whole Marty thing is, you'll use a lot of tape to talk about Marty. But Philip, Philip too was, Philip is really a good athlete to this day. He's an amazing golfer. Philip was very, very good. And he I always looked up to Fee because I hung out Philip and his friends a little bit more towards the end.
Yeah.
7 days straight. But so sports was always there to this day. I mean, my daughter, my oldest, ironically, she ended up becoming a pretty good basketball player in Colorado. In fact, she was Miss Colorado. She ended up with winning 3 state championships. And,
no kidding. Wow.
Yeah. She went to the University of Colorado and then Boston College. And she was a really good basketball player. I ended up coaching her a little bit and did some in grade school. I coached girls basketball and stuff like that. And she gave us, she ended up giving me just, and Nancy, my wife, just, a great ride during high school. And even the college years was, a lot of fun because, she got to live kind of that dream of, how the next generation goes. I don't know, Mick, do you have kids and stuff?
Or? I have 3 boys.
You have 3 boys. Okay.
Yeah.
So, probably maybe the difference between, my parents, my dad was working a 4 to 12, he had 8 kids. Right. And that our generation was just out. It was a different era. Right? We just went and did our thing. And I don't know, I'm sure this is probably true for you as a dad, but, we were just more on top of the kids, what activities they're doing, soccer,
right.
basketball. And so we're very much involved with all that, getting them into the club sports and making sure they're, on the right track. If they are showing talent in a certain area. And so that's what happened with my oldest. So, yeah, so the basketball hoops, to bring this back, just kind of it ended up being a good ride. Phillip's kid, you know, Jessica is a she's playing in Ireland, so she became a professional basketball player.
Kidding. Wow.
Yeah, Phillip's daughter, she really had game. And then, you know, Phillip's oldest boy, Nick, too, was a pitcher in college. So he was, you know, he had the sports, the Fresley sports, you know, and so forth. But,
I remember Fee being a good basketball player because he had, you know, monkey arms, and he had the, you know, he was tall, and he could, you know, forget about getting a rebound off of Fee. I mean, you know, he had, unlike, you know, you and your brother Marty, Fee had this sort of cool, this is the only word that comes to mind, this sort of laid back approach to the world that you know, that just was different than like an aggressive sports guy. You know, that's the way I remember Fee being very cool.
Yeah. See, Phillip was, he had the amazing ability to, Fee could be a great athlete. And at the same time, like, Phillip smoked, right? And he, and he, you know, Fee partied. And, you know, quick story, you know, so when we moved to Boulder, of all places, from Queens, you know, Phillip made the high school basketball team, but got kicked off for smoking, right? And he was, and that team that won in Boulder won two state championships. They had a couple of players that pretty good basketball team, and they took it pretty serious out here too, the hoops. And so Phillip kind of liked to play, you know, he had the sports, but he also liked to party. So
right,
get into trouble. Right. And, you know, that unfortunately that didn't play out too well here. It probably would have been a different story had we stayed in New York a little bit with the sports, but the way they, you know, it was a little bit different how just growing up here and how they manage things. I think you got a few more breaks if you were a New York kid and kind of maybe drinking or smoking versus out here. It's kind of like, absolutely not, you know, these are the rules, and you break them, you're off the team, you know?
Yeah. So what's a favorite story of yours growing up in the park? Do you have a story that comes to mind?
Yeah. You know, the park has so many stories, right? Like, I mean, there's so many things like you can point to that are amazing. You know, I've listened to some of the recordings, so everybody touches on certain things. So I don't want to be repetitive, but what can I bring up? I remember playing cards. Remember a card game with Jerry? You brought up Jerry and Jerry Fleming.
Yeah.
And do you remember Emil?
Yeah, Emil. Yeah, sure.
The giant guy, right? So and I think it was Joanne Fleming and myself and Jerry, and it might have been Head, might have been there. And it was like the Fleming family, and I'm in this card game, and we're playing, and it's like High Chicago, right? And you got to understand, I mean, I'm 13 years old or whatever, and we're in this game, and this pot grows to like, I mean, it's like $50 in the pot.
And it's like $1 million today.
$1 million to me.
Yeah.
And it goes on forever because you needed the highest spade and the poker hand to win. And I think I ended up pulling like two kings or something, right? With I had the king of spades.
Uh-huh.
And I ended up winning this thing. And I just remember like Jerry, like with that grin, you know, and just laughing that I won. And I thought it was a gold mine, right? I was out at the park that night, you know, buying beers for people and thinking I had won the lottery because it was like the greatest thing. And, you know, I was out buying comic books or whatever, but it was pretty cool. And that's a good memory, to be honest. But there's a lot of them. I had, you know, there's so many things. I mean, the park, the raids, the cops, running from the cops. I'll tell you one story that I remember, and I don't know if you were up to park when this happened, but do you remember, like, people would take, you know, you'd have the garbage, right? And, you know, people throw out their, like, you know, whatever, their couches and whatnot and their tables and shit like that. So sometime around, it was around July 4th, I guess. Yeah. And, you know, it was just like chair and, you know, it's from, you know, metal chair or whatever. It's got the, you know, four legs to it. Great. And we're all up the park with bottle rockets, right? And, you know, I can't remember who did this, but somebody loads four bottle rockets into the chair, you know, the legs or whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm riding my bike. I'm like in center right field, you know, the park on the Fairbury Avenue side, right? Like where home base was.
Right.
And I'm in right field, center field. And from where those benches were, like where we all played hoops, right? All the good games were, the food court.
Yeah.
Somebody lights the four bottle rockets. I'm in like right field, center field, riding my bike. And in the back pocket, I got like two dozen bottle rockets that I bought. It hits me in the ass. And bottle rockets are shooting off everywhere, right?
Oh,
and I'm on fire, basically. And I think it was Peter Glusak's dad or something. Like, remember the guys that used to water their lawn and their, you know, their shorts and stuff, and they're hanging out on the lawn. And anyway, he runs over. I'm running around with my pants on fire, literally. And he puts this out, right? And basically, I got a blister the size of a softball in my ass.
No kidding. Oh, my gosh. I never heard
that. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so I go home, whatever. I get fixed up. I don't know. My mom or something. I think it was my mom patches me up. And then I was back out in the park like an hour later, whatever.
Yeah.
I think it was Jimmy Hamlin. I think it was Jimmy Hamlin. Laughing. And he had such a great laugh. He was like Jerry with the smile, you know. That's some of the things about the park that I remember, is just some of the great laughs and like people's faces lighting up. And Jimmy Hamlin said that was the funniest thing. I mean, he was literally crying. He never said anything in his life. And so anyway, that was kind of a memory. I did a lot of stuff up the park, though. That's one. But what else have I done? I broke Alan's nose up the park. I remember that.
Really?
No, it was I think it was more like a wintertime kind of a thing. Oh. And I was with Diane, my sister, and Alan was just pissing me off. I don't know. He was just being a little shit. And I ended up pushing him and he broke his nose. And like it would, you get that snow frost and like even the parkies would make like an ice ring. Do you remember dust?
Yeah, for sure.
That stuff? Yeah. So, and that was another thing where people would take stuff from the garbage and make like, you know, the goalie would have like, you know, the pads from a couch or whatever as protection, right? We get, you know, a bunch of hockey sticks up at the corner store or whatever.
Yeah.
At jeans or whatever, but anyway, it was one of those winter type days, as I remember. I think, and there was a little ice or something, and I just pushed Alan down and broke his nose and stuff, and actually enjoyed it. It was good to do that. He was a little bit of an ass that day, and I don't know. But I was big though, and I was pushing him a little bit, so anyway.
It's funny because I remember Alan is such a great guy. I can't think of a single time that I have a negative thought about him, you know?
Alan's a great brother. Alan, very successful. And Alan's just really, really, I mean, all my brothers really, you know, I can't say anything bad about him other than, you know,
they are brothers.
It's just a pump, but I mean, now that we're all grown up and stuff, I mean, Alan's great. Philip, Marty. I can't really, say anything.
Yeah. I remember your sister was little. I mean, she's your youngest, right? The youngest sibling.
Yeah, Diane was the last one born, she was so famous. She actually, when she was born, my mom's picture and my sister were on the cover or on the front page of Long Island Press. Do you remember that newspaper?
Yeah, I do remember the Long Island Press, but for what?
Because it was, the article was basically Fresley's, after seven boys, a daughter.
and
German Shepherd or whatever, and Herman Fresley, is like police officer, finally has a girl, and Diane's doing very well. She's in Pennsylvania. She has three boys,
So you guys are all over the place. I know Alan's in Florida, right?
Alan's between Florida and Long Island. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I saw a picture of Fee the other day. Fee was in New York having dinner with Lon and Bobby and Jimmy Beggins and a group of guys.
Yeah. I saw that. Yeah. Jimmy Beggins. Yeah, all of those guys. Which goes to the point, right? Like, it didn't matter to the age.
Right.
Grouping that we were in, we still have all the brotherhood of Queens Village like hanging out, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, the older guys, Jerry and those guys, while I was always respectful, it's slightly intimidated by all of them, I always felt like Jerry always had an eye out for me. Like I didn't have to worry. Jerry was around, nothing bad was going to happen, that kind of thing.
Yeah. All those guys, I think, and listen to your tapes, which I think are great, Nick. I think it's really good what you're doing. Because they all resonate in certain, there's certain stories and things that just take you back. But, the Jerry and Terry Quinns and Johnny Lawless, all those guys, and Joey Gross, they were all kind of coaching us up. They were very much encouragers, and we were all, I think growing up, we had our issues, right? Like not every family was perfect. I had a brother that died and stuff. And I think those guys were always kind of looking out for the better interest, even though they gave you shit and they call you out.
Yeah.
For the most part, I think everybody had each other's back, and so I look at it, moving away, to Colorado, I've always looked back and saying, it's good memories because it's not like, I just see like those guys doing the right thing, right? And I always felt like I learned a valuable lesson from that and tried to, be an encourager and try to do the best Eric Fresley I could out here.
Right.
Some of that comes from the Lords and definitely the Braddock Park experience.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, let's face it. It was an honor to be teased by Jerry, right? It wasn't meant to diminish you at all. As a matter of fact, I would feel a little bit left out if Jerry didn't at least make fun of me once that evening. Like, hey, Jerry, did you not see me? You're not going to call me Mickey the Dickie or something? This kind of thing. So even in their teasing, I always felt a little bit loved on. Tommy Pecora was a terrible ball buster. Terrible.
Yeah.
But again, I always felt like he knew I was there, right? He saw me.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he wasn't paying attention and I wasn't getting teased and busted on. So it was an interesting dynamic to have them be the tough guy, the big guy, and yet, like you said, still sort of taking care of us, watching out for us, paying attention to us. There was a little bit of love in between all those teases.
Definitely. I feel that way. When Jerry would say things like, and again, part of your recordings, I listened to this and I think about this. I moved away. I thought about this quite a bit because, it was hard to move away from Queens and Lourdes. You know, when I was growing up here in Colorado, it was such a big change. But, you know, I can remember, like, Jerry, when he held court, right? And he would say things like, all of a sudden he's telling you something or explaining something. He says, "Hey, Frez," you know, just the wording. And when he would explain something was, you just kind of listened, right? And he held court and they're like, you know, it was kind of an enduring way. Like, you know, I could think like we, you know, Ryles, I heard you some of Ryles' stuff. And you used to do things like that. You know, when I was at the park, you'd say like, "Wild man, Mana," and I don't know what doing. But you guys would call out something positive, you know, and I was, I just always appreciated that, I guess, is my point. And I always appreciated, you know, I think sometimes the park and some of the history, maybe it gets a bad, like, even the older generation that was running through, you know, I call them like, you know, maybe the 60s, Vietnam era folks, my brother Richard, you know, they get a bad little rap, but, you know, those guys had no guardrails. You know, they were growing up and like whiteboarding, you know, brand new to the whole experience of like their generation, you know. When we grew up, you know, I think, you know, we learned, you know, what not to do. You know, we had the lessons from that generation. And I think the next generation, you know, coming through the park and stuff, you know, it seemed like, you know, that they were trying to move it in a better direction. Like we weren't going to go down that deep slope to where, you know, you were doing, you know, drugs and, you know, to the point where it's like, you know, you're going to screw yourself up. You know, it was kind of, you know, it was just more, you know, it was, again, it was just more focused on the sports and stuff like that. And, we're supporting going on, but it was just different. And I think, you know, to be honest, it's like, you know, we were pretty blessed really that baby boom from late 50s and early 60s, like, I'm sorry. Yeah. It's the late 50s to, you know, 1960, 61, whatever it is, early baby boom. It was almost like a wave. Like our whole group grew up at such an amazing time because, you know, there were so many of us and we had the park and we had, you know, so much to do with a lot of freedom. And, you know, I think about my kids and stuff. It's like, it's different. It's totally different. You know, environment for them to grow up. It's more controlled and things. And you know, they just didn't have all that freedom to do whatever, you know, and then also to have, you know, people along the way that were coaching them up and trying to look out for them and, you know, growing up with them, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So a big part of this, the reason for putting together these interviews was trying to answer the question of what made that so special and why is it different than today? I mean, I can't think that it's more dramatically different than what my children have grown up, your children have grown up in. It couldn't be more different than that. And yet, you know, trying to answer this question of what made it so special for us? It wasn't just different. It was amazing. It was this second family outside of your family that you knew you were going to be taken care of, you know, like I can remember, I couldn't wait for it to be late enough in the morning. I was always an early riser to be late enough to get to the park. And I was one of the first ones there because I loved being there. I just loved being with everybody, you know, and when you hear everybody's stories, they more or less end up at that same spot, which is, you know, we wanted to be out and we wanted to be in this one place where there was so much positive energy going on any particular time.
You know, no question. I mean, I, you know, it was, there's, you know, there's just so much going on at the park, and all different ages, right? Different groups. The sports, I can remember on some of my trips back to New York from Colorado, and I think it was summer of 77, 78. And, there was always things happening, right? And,
always.
You had the music, you talk about why. I mean, you grow up at that time and we had the best music. Everybody, do you remember everybody having like their favorite band? They go to a show at the Nassau Coliseum and, Bob Seger or, the Allman Brothers or The Who or The Stones, everybody with their shirts and, the music that was going on at the park. And it was just like, I mean, I think back, it's like, you're never going to have, my kids' generation or your kids, like, there was just so much going on that was so, it was like the perfect storm, right? You had this baby boom generation that was free to do stuff. You had big families, right? So you have parents looking out for you. You had friends looking out for you. We grew up in this great era of music. Like I said, wasn't in the 60s generation. We were kind of in the 70s, and we had learned from that. And I think people were a little bit more cognizant of what to do, what not to do. You had the sports was, we did everything. I mean, the PAL, I mean, I can remember Quack and all of that, like taking us to, we did kickball, we did punchball, softball tournaments. Do you remember the touch, like the touch ball games like that?
Touch football on the baseball, on the blacktop,
The blacktop, right? And you had all different ages like playing. And I just remember like constantly, whether it was Lords or like what was going on at the park, stickball, all of that stuff it was phenomenal. And, I wouldn't have changed anything. Like, and I think everybody, benefited from it. I mean, what else can you say? Like it was, you're out and about. So I live in Colorado, right? So one of the things that I enjoy the most is when I get away from, like if I go up, I have an RV and I'll do camping and I have friends up in the mountains and whatnot and hiking and do this kind of stuff. And, you go to places where there's no cell phone, right? And it's the most enjoyable when you can actually shut off, right, from the everyday, stresses from work or whatnot.
Yep.
And you're just out, and it's the same thing. I'm kind of playing, and the only difference is it's out in the mountains, right, in Colorado. But as kids, we didn't have all the distractions that you have today. We were all focused in on, just hanging out and,
hanging out,
like relationship, right? Like my kids, sometimes today, like even when I was coaching girls basketball, I see these kids coming up today and they're like, they're dealing with so many issues. Like it's like stress and anxiety and, the depression. And I'm like, it's like, well, what are you doing about it? You need to like get out and start exercising and you need to start doing X, Y, and Z and not, do things that mentally that are healthy for you.
Yeah.
And, so much of, I think what we were doing and it, was just extremely healthy just growing up, we had, our parents to kind of help us to some extent. But, when you have big families and things like that, and they were working the way hours that they were working, it wasn't always the parents that were there.
So, but it's my belief at this point that our parents, who would often be perceived as negligent relative to the way parents are today, actually did us a significant great service by saying, get out of the house and go figure it out. None of us, I mean, I certainly didn't run home for help, right? I might ask one of my friends for help, but home was not the place that I would run to if I was in trouble. I was forced to figure it out. And at the time, I have to say that I'm one of those people that thought, gee, I wish my parents were a little bit more involved. And today, I have a totally different view on it, which is I'm glad my parents allowed me to figure it out. Right?
Yeah, definitely.
I'm more capable today because I was forced to figure things out as a kid than if I was spoon-fed and someone jumped in every time I was in a little bit of trouble. You know, my parents were like, sounds like you're in trouble. You take your lumps, you know?
Yeah. 100% agree. It's so true. And, you know, fortunately, we had the environment for that. You know, it was that.
Yes.
It was a different time to make that happen. And then we went the other way with overparenting and just, you know, micromanaging all of that. And I did, you know, and I think it was to your point, it was because, you know, it was like, you know, my dad was too busy working, you know, he's working 4 to 12, but would I like to see dad attend more baseball games and whatever? It's like, yeah. And, you know, when I was 21, I would be like, you know, I kind of felt like, shit, you know, where was my dad during some of this, you know?
Right.
As I got older, you kind of realize like, well, that was the model, if you will, I don't want to say business model, but it was the way that we grew up, and it's just different. But it was the most healthy thing that we could actually have had. You know, we grew up at such a great time. If you think about all the macro things that were going on, you know, where America was with, you know, I mean, you didn't have the competition we have today, right? So America was very strong. You had families, middle class families that could live, you know, with a relatively modest salary, right?
Right.
You had, you know, all these kids out doing stuff, and we had the, you know, the venue to do it at the park, you know?
Right.
And then all of the sports. I mean, I think about, like, you know, Tommy Sleazer's dad and other dads, Miss McPartland's dad and Jimmy Beggins's father. And then, you know, the other dads that were just like really encouraging, like take you to, I remember going to certain baseball camps and basketball camps and Holy Cross camps and stuff like that. And, you know, they were always kind of doing the right thing when they could, you know, if they weren't working a bit like that. But your interviews have made me rethink, because I had to go back. I hear things and I absolutely laugh in my ass off at some of them, because it was just so poignant on the times that we grew up. I mean, so many funny things. You know, I got to tell you, I had, I think, you know, real quick, I had, you know, Ryle's comment on the fidget at the park made me laugh my ass off.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. It was so funny. Funny. Like, I forgot all about that. And that was
totally
amazing.
Forgot about that until he brought it up. And I remember when he was telling the story, I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh my gosh, that memory's way, way back. I got to pull that up. And then I remembered, oh sure, he did that all the time. He would flood the basketball court.
He flooded the basketball court. We used to do that, which would piss us off. And I can't remember. And it would piss us off, right? Because we were playing like full court hoops there.
Yeah.
It did remind me of the time that I think Jimmy Beggins went home to his house, and we, bunch of us, and I think Chris Kelly was one of the main culprits on this. We went over to Beggins' house, and he was down in the basement. We turned on the hose and just stuck it in his room and got his whole, like, got Jimmy wet in the basement. He comes out screaming and shit like that. And there was about of us just being real dicks, but anyway, that was a good memory. But like that, Darby Dent, you know, he throws out the walk homes to like Lords, like going down 93rd Avenue.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that stuff. You know, my aunt lived off of Fairbury Avenue on 222nd Street. And I just remember, like, you know, there's, you know, Marty Stevenson and Willie Burnett.
Yep. And right there.
Guys, you know, you had Johnny Beggins, we're all walking, you know, and just, you know, going to school and all of that stuff was just so cool, you know?
Yes.
And
the thing is, your kids didn't walk to school. Okay. No. My kids didn't walk to school. And when you realize how important, I mean, Darby said it very well, that was the processing time. You know, that was the time where you discovered things that you didn't realize when you were in the middle of it. You realized it when you were telling the story to somebody else, how valuable that event was.
Yeah. I think, you know, it was a lot of times, you know, you could be talking about whatever, what happened at the park, right? Or what's going on at Lourdes, or who's dating who, or what's happening, whatever it was. And I just, you know, Barr and Willie Burnett's like, you know, football pads, right? Remember, like, the Wednesday Lourdes, like, I love to get out of class at noon, right? And we'd play football and stuff like that. And I don't know, it was a good memory. He's right. There were a lot of good friendships that evolved, you know, by those walks. And just, you know, it's just amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, it's incredible. Pause here. But.
Okay. Well, Eric, thank you for today. Like I said, I never would have thought you and I would be talking like this, but you were a big part of my memory of the park. You, I don't know, for some reason, you're always there. You're somewhere in the frame, you know?
Yeah. I appreciate you taking the time and doing this. I think it's good. There's a lot of stories out there. You're only scratching the surface, right?
Agreed.
But it's worth telling. And I think, you know, I Queens Village and, you know, my upbringing in Lourdes, it's helped me immensely. And I'm sure it's, you know, everybody that's out there, they're, you know, they wouldn't trade it for anything. Right. And it
100%.
And they, you know, if, you know, most of, you know, our crew has gone on to do better things and become better people because of it.
Yes.
And I appreciate that. I got to say one thing too, Mick, on, you know, Charlie O.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So that, yeah.
Yeah.
That one hurts.
Yeah. That was, Charlie was very, such a great thing.
And I, you know, whenever I came back from Colorado, Charlie, I would run into Charlie, and it was like I'd never left. And he would tell stories about Lourdes, and he would, you know, it was the same things, right? Everything that he would talk about, we just, I don't know, we just laughed, and it was just good memories, and it was so much fun to talk to him and stuff like that. And that's one that breaks my heart a little bit.
Yeah.
We had passed. Well, I heard Michael World too.
Yeah.
And those guys were, you know, they were like me. They were high energy, right? And they liked to goof off and do things. So those guys were definitely dear to my heart for sure.
For sure. All right. Thank you, Eric.
Okay. Be well, Mickey. Good to talk to you.
Talk to you soon. See ya.
Bye-bye.